If we have the technology to solve the climate crisis, why aren't we moving faster? The answer? We don't have the workforce to get it done. Right now, there are thousands of companies working on climate solutions, building the future of energy, transportation, and materials. But there's one huge problem. They can't find enough skilled workers. Meanwhile, millions of people want to work in climate, but don't know where to start. That's where today's guest comes in.
Yeah, so for some time, I had no idea what to do at all. I was just feeling the increasing tension and disconnect with my values. Then I thought, you know, why don't I see if there are any climate jobs out there for someone like me?
Welcome to Someone Like You, the podcast where we challenge the old rules of business to build something better. I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert, entrepreneur, and lover of bold, sustainable ideas. Every week, we dive into data-backed insights, groundbreaking ideas, and real-world strategies that help you outthink and outmaneuver the status quo. And today, we're talking about something that could change the trajectory of the climate crisis, how we scale up the workforce to meet the demand of climate solutions. My guest is Eugene Kirpichov. He's a co-founder and the executive director of Work on Climate. A few years ago, Eugene left a 15-year career as a staff software engineer at Google, because he just could no longer justify not working on climate. But when he tried to switch careers, he hit a surprising wall. It wasn't clear where to find jobs in climate or really how to get hired. So he built the solution. Work on Climate has since grown into a thriving community of over 32,000 people, helping thousands find meaningful jobs in this space. But this just isn't about careers. It's about transforming an entire industry to decarbonize the economy.
Just as solving climate change, it's not about building a separate, you know, climate industry next to the existing industries of automotive, you know, construction, finance, and so on. It's about rebuilding every single industry. It's about transitioning every single industry to the shape it needs to take in a green economy.
This conversation is a must listen if you're thinking about shifting into climate work, building a climate-focused business, or you just want to understand where the biggest gaps and the biggest opportunities exist. Let's dive in. Eugene, welcome to the Someone Like You show.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Can you share what prompted you to leave a 15-year career in really big tech to focus on climate?
Yeah, so it was a sequence of things that gradually built up my, you know, my feeling of disconnect between my values and what I'm doing. I think it began probably when I watched The Inconvenient Truth on a plane flight, and I watched the sequel on a flight back, and then I started just paying more attention to the people around me who were in this area. For example, at the time I was at Google, and Google actually has a surprising amount of climate and energy scientists inside. So I met one of them at one of the internal workshops having nothing to do with climate, and just got to know him and asked, like, well, is it really as bad as they say? And he's like, yeah, it's pretty bad. Someone better do something about it. So after all of this, I started reading some books and whatnot, and just gradually, especially during the pandemic, it got to a point where I could just no longer justify to myself why the hell I'm still not working on this. And then I quit when I was just unable to justify it anymore.
And what type of role were you at Google?
I was a staff software engineer. I was working on Google's big data infrastructure and AI infrastructure, things like that. So, you know, classical big tech stuff.
But at the time that you quit, were you planning on working somewhere, or did you have an in on a company to start or join? What were you thinking at that time?
Yeah, so for some time, I had no idea what to do at all. I was just feeling the increasing tension and disconnect with my values. Then I thought, you know, why don't I see if there are any climate jobs out there for someone like me? And I had absolutely no idea how to look for a climate job for someone like me. So I did my best and found like 5 jobs, applied to them, didn't get any of them. And I obviously didn't know how to look, because there are actually thousands of them. And I eventually realized that, like, you know what, I want to focus full time on finding what I'm going to do. I don't want this to be something that I'm half-assing, so to speak. So that's why I decided to quit. And at the time, I also connected with a colleague of mine, also from Google AI, who seemed to be in the same boat. And after we started talking about it within a week, we just talked each other into handing in our resignations right away. So yeah, the other factor obviously was not doing it alone. But yeah, we had no idea what we're gonna do. We just knew that we're gonna quit and then we're gonna figure it out.
But you knew that you wanted to solve that same issue that you had, where, as you said, I need to get in this, I want to get into this workplace. Where the heck, where do you find jobs in climate? So you did narrow, did you know to narrow down in on that idea?
Not at all. No, the plan was just to spend as much time as possible learning and figuring out what we're gonna do. Maybe it would be find a job, maybe it would be start a company, maybe it would be something else. Just like focus fully and completely on understanding how do we apply ourselves to this. And a good thing is that when I posted my goodbye note, it turned out to go viral and was seen by about 500,000 people. And that naturally gave us a huge influx of people who wanted to talk to us, both people in the same boat, and more importantly, people who are also experts in some area related to climate solutions who are eager to help. So basically, for the next few months, pretty much all we did was just have hundreds and hundreds of calls with these people and learning different domains.
And this note, why do you think it went viral? Do you think it was the connection of obviously the note itself, or do you think the note itself plus the fact that you're leaving such a, a well-known, such a great job being at Google?
I think it was kind of the perfect storm. It was, I really did not expect that it would make waves like that, but I think it had all the factors that tend to, make something like this go viral. It was during the pandemic when everybody was having a crisis of meaning. It was, somebody quitting Google, quitting their job, which is something many people were considering, quitting a lucrative job, which is to many people strange, but really, like, it wasn't anything special to me. It was about climate and search of meaning. Just, all of these things together seemed to add up to it resonating with a lot of people.
I want to pause here just because this is more than just a personal story. It's a business signal. Eugene's resignation went viral because there's a massive demand for meaningful work in climate, but the hiring pathways aren't clear. If you're building in this space, think about that. Thousands of skilled professionals want to transition, but there's no efficient system helping them do that. That's a market gap. So you had many, many calls after, hundreds, it sounds like. How did you slowly start to narrow in on there's a problem is that we need more people in the climate workspace? And how did you narrow in on this idea for work on climate?
So a couple of things related to that. So one is that we met a massive amount of people who were in the same boat and also wanted to do something about climate. They didn't know where to start. They wished to apply their skills, but they weren't even sure if it's possible or how to look for ways to do that. But at the same time, we were learning so much about different climate solutions and the kinds of skills they need. And to me, it was almost a shock. I didn't know any of that. I was the my entire career before that, I was in the tech bubble, and all I knew was tech. So I had no idea beyond the most basic idea about how the rest of the economy worked and what it meant to decarbonize it. So it was just completely fascinating and new. And I was very aware that the vast majority of people like me probably also have no idea how fascinating it is and how much work there is to do with all kinds of skills. So we like really what happened is that we met all these people in the same boat and thought, why don't we do something about that while we look for what we're going to really do? And why don't we put them into a little online community and let them have a similar experience to what we had, which is hanging out with other people who are like them and other people in climate. It seemed to help us, so let's see if it helps them too. And help them it did. So the community turned out to be, a smashing success, you could say. Turned out to be really helpful to a lot of people. And by now we have over 32,000 people, and over 3,000 people actually found jobs and credited to the community. And a similar number of founders credit us with some kind of company success or my company milestone or key task that they achieved. So yeah, the community model, the kind of self-organizing model, seems to really work. But initially it was a hobby project. So really, work on climate is a hobby project gone too far. It started in this way where we did it just because why not and because it seemed easy. And at the same time, we were looking into other areas and thought, maybe we'll do something in climate finance. Maybe we'll do something in regenerative agriculture. Maybe we'll do something in climate risk, and so on. But at some point, it just dawned on me that, you know what, the real problem we're dealing with here, bringing people who want a climate job into climate jobs, is maybe 1% of it. The real problem is much, much, much bigger. And it's not measured in thousands of people, it's measured in hundreds of millions of people. And I am dissatisfied with the other solutions to this problem. So I guess I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life. And that's when I went all in and incorporated it as a proper nonprofit, started fundraising, started crafting a coherent strategy that can tackle the full thing, started hiring people after raising some money, and so on.
And we're really going to be talking today about just kind of this, the hype of climate jobs and the hope of climate jobs and the whole kind of industry around it. But you made a decision to start a nonprofit, and so that makes decisions around funding and your funding models. And so has that been or has that felt like the right decision now moving into what you built? A lot of founders might be wondering, why not a for-profit? Wouldn't that just be more scalable? I had the same question. But here's the key difference. Work on climate isn't just creating a product. It's shifting an entire ecosystem. And sometimes the best way to drive systematic change is through a nonprofit model. But don't get me wrong, this space is full of for-profit opportunities too, especially in hiring, training, and workforce development.
Yeah, it's the right decision for the type of impact that we create. So I want to be incredibly clear with your audience, like, do not start a nonprofit unless it's the only way to accomplish the impact that you're looking to accomplish. And in the majority of cases, it's not the right model. But it is the right model for what we are doing, because what we are doing is systems change. It's changing the way that schools and accreditors, economic development agencies, accelerators, professional society standards bodies work. So this type of work you just can't do as a for-profit.
Yeah, so let's talk about that work. Where do you think work on climate is focused specifically on changing kind of the path for, a lot more people to be involved in the climate space?
So what most people know us for is different from our long-term impact model. What most people know us for is building this community where if you are, in climate looking for connections, or if you're looking to get into climate, you join the community and you use our many programs within the community and you get help that way. So that's what most people know us for. But like I mentioned, this type of impact can happen at a scale of maybe tens of thousands of people, while the impact we need to create is on a scale of hundreds of millions. And let me explain why. The reason why is that just as solving climate change, it's not about building a separate, climate industry next to the existing industries of automotive, construction, finance, and so on. It's about rebuilding every single industry. It's about transitioning every single industry to the shape it needs to take in a green economy. So transitioning from gas cars to electric cars, from fossil fuel energy to different forms of green energy, from insurance that accounts for climate risk poorly to insurance that accounts for it properly, and so on. So it's an economy-wide transition and a really big one. And it's natural that it has to be coupled with a transition in the workforce. We're building a different economy and it needs a different workforce. I think the best comparison you can draw is what happened to both the economy and the workforce when electricity was invented, right? So it's not like we just started having the electricity economy next to the regular economy. No, it had a profound impact on absolutely everything. And it's not like we started having people who look for electricity jobs find those jobs. No, every single job changed. New business models appeared, existing business models transformed. People with the same skills started working on different things. People with different skills started being needed, and so on. So this is the same type of thing that we're going through now. Maybe a more modern analogy is the introduction of generative AI, but I think the impact that we're going through when it comes to greening the economy, I think it's probably larger than that. So the result of that is that we need a workforce that's just quite different. It needs different skills. It needs people working on different things with those skills. It needs people working together in different ways, subject to different regulations and constraints and incentives and so on. And if we leave this change to happen by itself via the market forces.
Okay, this next part is huge. We're not just talking about adding green jobs, we're talking about a fundamental restructuring of every industry. Think about what happened when electricity was introduced. Think about what AI is doing right now. This shift is at that scale. And when industries go through transitions this big, they create massive business opportunities.
Well, for comparison, the famously growing software industry took about 40 years to get to 25 million people. And here we have about a quarter of the time to go 10 times as far. So we need to go faster than the market will by itself. And that's what Work on Climate is trying to make happen.
There's a lot of, talk around, the oil industries. The workers there are perfect workers to go into some of these green technologies. Is that a true statement, or is that, or are there some similarities, I guess, depending on what industry they go in? And is it
No,
that
yeah.
you're, or is it that you go into those industries and say, hey, we can upskill you? Like, how do, what, how does that, how does that all, how does it all feel and work?
Yeah, it's absolutely true that many of the changes we need, existing oil and gas expertise is a very close match to that. So really, oil and gas, it's too bad that it's so bad for us because their engineering prowess is so. It's awe-inspiring, honestly. I spent a lot of time while sick with COVID just watching videos about fossil fuel infrastructure. Like, those people know how to build stuff. It's, again, too bad that what they're building is bad for us, but they're really good at engineering. They're really good at massive planet-scale engineering. They're really good at manufacturing. They're really good at drilling, which is needed for some forms of carbon capture. They're really good at material science, which is needed for creating many forms of alternative materials and so on. So it is absolutely true. And the other reason why we need to help people in that industry move on is because their industry is just not going to exist in the same form eventually. You know, it might for the next couple of decades if they delay it for longer, maybe for a little bit longer than that, but it's not going to exist in the long term. It's just, the math just doesn't adapt. We're going to run out of the things that they're trying to take out of the ground. Or they're going to get outcompeted by cheaper energy as we scale up energy storage. So, for the transition to go smoothly, we need to bring people who work in the dying industries. We need to bring them along. Otherwise, it's just going to be a really difficult transition because people whose industry is dying will be doing everything they can to slow down the changes that they're making it die.
They need to be able to move on. And so one I heard a read a report on the green energy jobs in Texas, for example, right, which is a well-known oil state in the United States, is that there are now more green jobs than there are jobs that are in the petroleum industry. And so what is the size of this transition in terms of like jobs? Like, are we talking, obviously you're talking about this massive scale that we need to do, but is it, in North America, for example, is there 10 million jobs currently, and we need, 80 million in the next kind of 10, 20 years? Like, is there any figures around like how big is this change actually going to be number wise? These numbers matter because they don't just affect climate, they affect the entire economy. We're already seeing labor shortages in key industries like construction, energy, and advanced manufacturing. Now imagine layering on the fact that millions of jobs will need to transition to low carbon industries. If you're a founder, investor, or policymaker, this is where the market is headed, towards reskilling, workforce matching, and career transitions at scale.
So it really depends on how you count. It's going to end up being hundreds of millions globally, whichever way you count. And that's just new jobs. That's not even counting the jobs where the necessary skill sets to do them are affected. That I'm going to guess that's probably billions. Because if you think again, what was the impact of electricity on or computers on jobs? Billions of jobs have been impacted, and this isn't really much different conceptually. But it really depends on what you count as a green job. And I think that I'm coming to the conclusion that the concept of a green job is useful only temporarily. Right. So, for example, if you're an accountant who is working at for example, at an alternative meat startup, you're doing accounting, right? It's really the same skill, but you're doing it for a different purpose. Is it a green job? For some purposes, it's useful to say yes. For some purposes, it's useful to say no. Right. Or if you're a lawyer and you're specializing in some parts of law related to climate, for example, perhaps you're facilitating transactions around renewable energy development. Is that a climate job? Arguably, yes, it promotes the green transition. By other definitions, it may not be. So the way that I like to think about it is that I like to think about the green workforce transition. And I think about it as the totality of changes that need to happen in the workforce to get us from here to there.
There's a similar analogy about 10 to 15 years ago in technology, is that you used to be working in technology and, oh, I work for a technology company, and you know, you fast forward to today and pretty much every single industry is using some sort of technology to run their business. And I guess that kind of is, you know, a similar frame. And so right now there is still, because of that difference, is like, is this a green job? Is this a job that's just a job that's now just tailored to it? And how does that work? There is a little bit of, you know, skeptics talk around just the cost burden, and that there's this perception that the economic opportunities right now aren't there for these type of roles. You know, why is that kind of, you know, skepticism out there right now?
I think the skepticism is probably mainly coming specifically from the tech community, right? So I realize that I'm talking to a tech audience, but like really, I think that people in tech are being paid obscenely unfair amounts of money. And I'm saying that as somebody who was paid that money, it's an industry that has gotten lucky in basically printing money. Right. So yes, you're probably not going to be making the same kind of 500-600K per year. You might be in an executive role, but really in most of the economy, that's just not how much you're paid. So if you're and it's not specific to climate. The point is again that if you're working on climate, if you're working on rebuilding some parts of the economy, really the standards by which you're paid are the standards of that branch of the economy. So if you're working on electric vehicles, well, look how much people who work on vehicles are paid. You're going to be paid normal amounts of money for that industry, right? Or for example, if you're going to be working at a Series A startup, well, look how much Series A startup people are paid. It's less than you get paid as some kind of senior director at Meta, right? It's different because that's a Series A startup and this is Meta. So there is I don't think that there is really necessarily like a green discount on jobs, but I think that somebody who is used to being paid an amount of money that is not really justified by its social value, yeah, they're going to have to make some trade-offs. But somebody who doesn't mind just being paid normal money, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, so somebody that's building, you know, a diesel car is now building an electric car, very, very similar, similar type of pay. I hear this hesitation all the time. Do climate jobs actually pay well? It's a fair question, especially for senior professionals considering a switch. But what you'll hear next is that many climate jobs actually pay more than traditional roles because the demand for specialized skills is so high. This is a key insight for businesses trying to hire. Compensation needs to reflect the fact that top talent isn't going to take a pay cut to work in climate.
Yeah, in fact, actually, there is research that shows that for some definitions of green jobs, people in those jobs do get paid more, right? So, for example, electricians, HVAC technicians, and so on, it's a really good job for someone entering the workforce. It's a six-figure job, which is not something that most, Americans can boast. All right, it's a good job. And jobs in existing roles with and without green skills required those with green skills required naturally pay more because the pool of applicants is smaller. For example, if you're working in procurement and if you're working in green procurement, you're going to be paid more than if you're working in regular procurement.
And for roles, what are the roles that we need right now? And obviously we're touching on, you know, all roles are going to have to be in some form thinking about this space, but very specifically, what are the roles right now where there's a lot of emphasis? We talked about, you know, electricians, of course, and others, but like where are the ones where there's kind of a lot of demand and not enough people?
Yeah, so I think there's two frameworks that I find useful in thinking about this. One is the framework that's maybe useful for somebody who's looking for a job, and the other is a framework that's useful for me as a workforce developer. So for someone looking for a job, again, you might be looking for a job where you know that what you're doing is going towards a good cause as opposed towards something that's, neutral or negative. Or you might be thinking about, am I doing something where if I wasn't doing it, things wouldn't be as good? Like, am I doing something that's on the critical path, which is also the perspective that I'm taking as a workforce developer. From the first perspective, it's literally all kinds of jobs. So whichever industry you're decarbonizing, what jobs are in that industry, it's the same jobs. So if you're working in electric vehicles, they still need accountants, mechanics, finance people, marketing people, sales people, engineers, and so on. Literally the same jobs. They may need a bit more of some of those, right? So for example, electric vehicles probably need a lot more electrical engineers, and they probably need more software engineers as well. Now, if you ask, and certainly some of the industries that are emerging need new specialized skills, right? So for example, in order to work on energy storage, we need a lot more electrochemists. Or in order to work on carbon capture, really you need people who have a PhD in some related technology. it's not really a standard role. There is a very small number of people who are a fit for that at all. Now, if you think about what roles are really on the critical path, so where are you part of a workforce bottleneck to climate progress, which is how we at Work on Climate like to frame our work. Our job is to remove workforce bottlenecks to climate progress. There are a number of workforce bottlenecks like that. So one of them, some of them that involve the most number of people are indeed probably skilled trades roles like electricians, HVAC technicians, but also, for example, construction workers, not necessarily a role that requires any traditional green skills per se, but it is a role where if we don't get more people in that role, we can't make climate progress because we need to build a lot of infrastructure. So those types of roles. Then there are changes all throughout the typical workforce of existing industries as those industries learn to decarbonize. So you start needing, it begins with needing some kind of at least basic sustainability literacy in their executives and boards. Then it continues with hiring usually extremely small sustainability teams, really small but important. And then it continues into the rest of their workforce where people in all kinds of functional roles now need new skills. For example, product designers suddenly need to design at a company that's serious about sustainability. They need to design for circularity, reuse, repair. Their supply chain people need to know how to, for example, write contracts that require their suppliers to report emissions and so on. So this skill transition needs to happen in order for more companies to decarbonize. Then there is also a cluster of highly specialized roles that are really critical. For example, we are basically out of electrochemists. From what I understand, the really big energy storage companies, they've basically hired all of them, and they do it so that small companies have literally nobody left to hire, literally nobody, even if they pay like three, four times more. So these are some of the example critical roles. I also mentioned certain roles in carbon capture. It's really hard to give an overview of the thing holistically, but I'm hoping that the few examples I give just get people's brains going in that direction.
One of the areas that you mentioned, which I think it was probably about 5 or so years ago, I was reading a lot of reports just in general around the services industry. So your constructions, your trades, and I own a home, and so I sometimes I'll chat with some trades when they come to do any maintenance or whatever. And it seems like they're all struggling to find people. The pathway to how many people are going into the construction trades, into the service industries, keeps going down as we have this mass of baby boomers that are retiring and lots of young people not wanting to get into that business. But at the same time, we have such an energy transition that needs these type of skills to actualize on this. This seems like just an absolute market gap that we have right now that's going to hit us in the very near future. This is where policy, education, and business need to work together. Right now, the number of electricians and skilled tradespeople entering the workforce isn't even close to what we need for electrification and building decarbonization. That means two things. One, businesses that train and deploy workers into these roles will be in high demand. And two, if we don't fix this fast, it will slow down the entire energy transition.
Yep, that's completely right. It's already hitting us, to be honest. So there's a lot of factors at play in why this market gap exists. Parts of them have to do with cultural reasons, where people who are entering the workforce, they're just not used to thinking of themselves as somebody who could become an electrician, right? Because what people think they could become is shaped by cultural forces. It's not shaped by the available job opportunities. By them too, to some extent, but largely it's shaped by what people see on the TV, on social media, what they see among their peers. And these things take a long time to change, a long time. And a rapid change in the market doesn't cause a rapid change in what jobs people like to take. Then there are also reasons having to do with lack of training opportunities. For example, when it comes to electricians, an electrician can make a lot more money being an electrician than they can make training electricians today. And this seems like it's probably fixable, but somebody needs to be working on fixing it. And there just aren't enough workforce development organizations working on fixing this or working on fixing this in a productive fashion. So, yeah, there is a lot of systemic issues at play here. That's exactly why I think that our work is needed. Yeah, it's really, I think, the workforce, the way that the workforce functions is not something that most people think about a lot of the time. But I personally think that it is just as fascinating as the economy at large and just as complex.
So you're obviously working on this exact issue from a for-profit entity perspective. What are the businesses that need to exist, or maybe some examples of companies that are working on this alongside you? Because obviously this is a we need a massive change. It's not just work on climate that can solve this. So what are the businesses that you are seeing, or the businesses that we need, like hiring maybe semi-retired electricians to train the electrician workforce because the others want to work in it? So like, what are the ideas that are out there, or opportunities that exist?
Yeah, certainly a lot of room for training, both training skilled trades, as well as training corporate staff. I don't know necessarily that there is a lot of money in that right now. There is a lot of need, but finding ways to make a lot of money with that, you're going to need some creativity. So I won't lie about that. I think a really big challenge with this is that workforce issues tend to be very systemic, and as such, they're much more fit for governments and nonprofits to solve than for profits, because the things you need to do are spread out across a large number of entities, like schools and government agencies and standards bodies and so on. And it's really hard for a single entity to capture the value that gets created as you solve this. So honestly, I don't have a very good answer for you as to like what can be the next climate workforce unicorn. I don't know if one exists. Maybe, but I don't know. I did, I think, speak about the areas that are needed, but it's not the same as areas where you can make a lot of money as a for-profit.
Yeah, and it seems like it would be an interesting research exercise to look at what type of programs that are focusing on climate and the need for businesses or need for jobs within the universities and college, high schools. Like, how many of those are now existing, and how many more are coming online? And maybe there's probably already a study on that too. But I would expect that in that level, it's definitely growing.
They're definitely growing. So there is a fairly decent number of entities that have popped up that provide some form of climate boot camps or climate sustainability literacy training. For example, our dear friends at TerraDo and OPF Academy and Climate Base and so on. These are all really great organizations, and they're doing much needed work. And then there is also a large number of existing schools and universities and school systems and accreditor standards bodies that are starting to do something in this direction. Very few are doing something at a satisfactory scale, I would say. So I think there is maybe only a couple of higher education institutions I know that are even aspiring to integrate climate. Well, the changes that are going to happen in the economy, trying to integrate them into every single subject. The overwhelming majority of them are continuing to silo it. So they're continuing to have, a sustainability department, as opposed to changing the way that they run their class for supply chain people, or they're continuing to have, an environmental engineering department rather than teaching their chemists that, hey, you can work on this and here's how you can work on this, or expanding their electrochemistry programs. So yeah, changes are happening, but they're happening at the pace typical in the academic world and not at the pace that this transition needs. So we have some work to do to accelerate it.
We spoke a lot around jobs. Obviously, that's the work that you do, but you also get to see a bit of a landscape into the entrepreneurs that are building, profitable and also market-driven businesses and ventures in the climate space. So, do you have any advice for people that are kind of sitting on the fence, thinking about jumping in into the space?
So I think the advice may be a little bit cliched, but the advice is going to be to start talking to a lot of people in different sub-industries, right? Let me try to give a few pieces of advice. So yes, one of them is to just spend a lot of time learning about the different branches of the economy, because if you're not somebody who has spent a lot of time learning about it, you probably really don't know, and probably a lot of things seem unsexy to you. I had this experience myself over and over and over as I was learning about different climate solutions. Like maybe I hear that somebody is, plugging, retiring oil wells in Texas, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's kind of niche. Doesn't sound like my thing. I guess good that they're doing that, but okay, fine, I'll talk to them. And then I talk to them, and then like, oh my God, why isn't everybody plugging retiring oil wells? It's so impactful. It's so interesting. Nobody's working on this. So really, as you talk to people and learn about these areas, you will find that there's a great amount of just fascinating things to work on. And really, the next question is going to be more about which of them are you actually equipped to work on. And here, one might be up for an unpleasant surprise that and especially us tech people, we're used to knowing our technology really well and then kind of being in our heads about it and thinking, okay, I know it really well, so surely I can build the next product that helps this. Well, you probably don't know the oil well industry really well, or you probably don't know the alternative meat industry really well. So you're going to need some help if you're going to work on that. So it's best to, as cliche as it sounds, be humble and do not be surprised if you find that all the things that seem obvious, like obvious solutions to you, that they have been tried and failed or they don't work. So you definitely need to pair up with a domain expert, almost certainly. It's not impossible to learn a certain area so well that you become the domain expert. That has happened. For example, that's how Charm Industrial started. There is a great podcast episode on My Climate Journey about that. Peter Reinhardt started it, and I think he was also coming from tech, and now he started essentially a carbon capture material science company. So it's possible, but it's really difficult.
The decision to move to a climate-focused business and job and career, and one that you've done as well, and the hope there is that you are doing something that is obviously impactful. You're doing something that aligns with your values, and in some cases, it's profitable and it aligns with your wallet, and that's all great, but from your own experience, or obviously from the experience of the 3,000 plus people that you've helped place into roles, how much impact has this been on their life, their happiness, and the values that they see doing this work? Here's something every business leader should think about. Employees don't just want good salaries, they want work that aligns with their values. The climate space is full of people making career shifts, not just for money, but for meaning. If your company is trying to attract top talent, this is a competitive advantage. Climate work is deeply fulfilling.
Yeah, I mean, people who are actively looking for this work, my overwhelming impression from talking to countless people like this is that they are suffering until they find it. So when they find it, the suffering is relieved, and you feel that, okay, finally, I can look at myself in the mirror. I am aligned with my values. I stop, freaking out every day about how bad everything is in climate, and I start, just focusing on what I do. I personally went through a bit of a roller coaster here. So, before I was doing anything on climate, it was like almost unbearable, the dissonance between what I'm doing and what I know I need to be doing. And yeah, then when I started working on it, then I felt a great sense of relief and a great sense of optimism and a great sense of finally being in control. So it's just emotionally, it's a really, really good feeling. I have to say that after a few years, after I learned more about how do the systems in our society function that create this problem, now I'm feeling again a little bit down. Because I see that even though there is a great deal that we can do, the forces that we're up against are very powerful, and we're going to have to do our absolute damnedest to counter them. But I think we can. So, from my conversations with other people like myself, this feeling is shared. So people do feel a large sense of relief when they start working on something that they know matters.
Eugene, that was a fascinating conversation on work on climate and the work that you did and your change of careers from working in the depths of Google to starting work on climate in this nonprofit. And so we talked a lot about the market opportunity, this huge change and shift for people that are going to have to enter into this workforce. Can you just touch a little bit on the market size and what you're seeing?
So, like I was mentioning in a podcast, the way that we should think about the green workforce transition is that it's a change in the nature of the entire workforce, comparable to what happened when electricity was introduced, or when the internet was introduced, or now that AI is being introduced. It is not limited to some people taking, electricity jobs or AI jobs. It affects the way that every job is done. It creates new business models that need both new roles and existing roles, and so on. It affects what skills are needed in existing roles in existing companies. So the way to think about it is really holistic. There is the workforce of yesterday, and then there's a workforce of tomorrow, and how are they different? In terms of the scale of this change, even if we look just at the new jobs that will exist because of this transition, it is measured in the hundreds of millions, as estimated, for example, by the International Labour Organization and by many other similar organizations. But again, that is just the new jobs. Likewise, for example, in the US, the Blue-Green Alliance estimated the Inflation Reduction Act, which had massive climate impacts. That act is creating 9 million new jobs just over the next decade, just in the US, just because of this particular legislation, and that's just new jobs. So that's not even counting the jobs where the necessary skills to do them are changing.
That was an incredible conversation with Eugene. It's clear that the transition to a green economy isn't just about new technology, it's about people. We need a workforce ready to scale climate solutions, and that means new career paths, new business models, and a massive shift in how industries operate. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who's thinking about their next move in climate. The more we get these conversations out there, the faster we can build solutions that actually make an impact. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.